Joe presents Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Hello and you're very welcome to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby here on Joe Together with Guinness. Happy Easter Monday to all our Penguins out there. We hope you're keeping well. We've got a serious show lined up for you today. We'll be chatting a lot of rugby, unfortunately, this week. We've got Dave McHugh from Line Up Sports joining us. We've got who is a rugby agent who's looking after the likes of James Ryan, Connor Murray, Tyke Furlong, Rob Kearney, and also, we'll be joined from his farm in England by Mr. Will Addison. And then we'll also be doing our classic album, which is Automatic for the People by REM, who are celebrating 40 years as a band this week. And also, our film of the week is Good Will Hunting, because we love Will Addison. How are you, Trimby? Happy Easter.
Brilliant, Barry. Great intro, by the way. You're becoming very professional.
Thank you. I've nothing else to do, man.
Isolation suits you. Yeah.
How many Easter eggs do you have?
I haven't had any Easter eggs. I just eat the leftovers from the kids. And then if one of them asks me, who had all my Easter eggs, I blame the other one.
It's just fights going on all over the place. And you've just chalked it all over your face.
Yeah. Whoa. I haven't had any Easter eggs, actually, right enough. We're too old for Easter eggs, Barry.
Yeah, apparently the calories in the actual Easter eggs are way higher than they would be in a chocolate bar, because they have to make the mold and make them set in a certain way. So you'd be doing yourself out of all that training you're doing, all those press-ups, by eating Easter eggs.
Yeah, that's all fallen by the wayside anyway.
I used to lie. One of my biggest faults as a child was I had a few major lies that I would tell each year, and it was how many Easter eggs I ate. I would like, I'd come into school on the Tuesday, I'd be like, yeah, I had 40 Easter eggs. Or around Pancake Tuesday, I'd be like, yeah, I had 75 pancakes yesterday.
And what? Prove it.
And I used to lie when I went to confession in mass, because I felt pressure that my naughtiness wasn't naughty enough. So I used to go in and make up lies to tell your man inside in the box, be like, I stole my sister's marker and I called my mother a fool or something like that.
You toned it down for the priest. I called her a silly billy.
Isn't that was the beginning of the end for me. It was like making up lies for confession. It doesn't work.
Yeah, I once got invited. Johnny Davis was an old S&C coach with Ulster Rugby. And they, his wife's family are Jewish, and they were celebrating the Passover one Easter. So I brought an Easter egg. And then I realized, I got to the door and I was like, oh, thanks for having me. And there's your Easter egg. And then I went, oh no.
What's the Passover? What do they do? Do they definitely don't eat Easter eggs?
No, Well, they were obviously they're not that Jewish. Like they understood. Yeah. Like they live in Belfast. It was fascinating. It was a whole like
trying to eat it before they answer the door.
Yes. Oh no. Oh no. The extra calories that Barry told me about. Really coming into play here. I think they were like they were grand. They were happy enough about it. And okay. Better than arriving with nothing. So one Easter egg anyway to sell, like a Christian a Christian item for your
the little body and the eggs, the chocolate eggs, right? This is what it's all about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
yeah. So go on, talk to me. How's your week four been?
I feel like maybe it's taken me 4 weeks to get into this condition, not physically. It's taken me 4 weeks to get physically into this condition in a less positive sense.
Just to get into the zone.
I feel like I've completely unwound. Isolation is just suiting me more and more. Maybe just because the weather's been so good over the weekend, but a couple of things that I've only kind of picked up on or realized kind of why it works so well, because there's no FOMO. My sister, told me about this, and she goes, you know, no one else is out, no one else is doing anything fun. So when you're sitting in the house, you're way more content and you're way happier.
That's that dawned on me as well this week. Or like no one's doing any proper work or anything substantial. They're like,
so you don't have to be effective with your time.
You don't have to get dressed at all. You can just stay in your underpants all day.
I think they should bring this in after coronavirus. They should bring this in. There should be a 6 week isolation period over the summer every year.
Yeah. Yeah, summer's so, because the weather made such a difference at the weekend.
Weather's important.
Unbelievable. I started getting into gardening at the weekend. I was like, phenomenal.
Yeah. The gardens around our place, honestly, they're incredible. Because we would just walk around the corner. Like, I bring the kids and their bikes and stuff just around the corner. Some of the gardens, like, I've taken a lot of pride in my garden over the last while as well. But still, there's some incredible gardens out there.
Have you been watching Peter O'Mahony on Instagram?
Yes, his is unbelievable. Rory's is the same, the two of them. I think they just get like, together and talk about lawnmowers.
If they're like, they're modern day man, top of the rung in terms of gardening. I'm like prehistoric man, maybe like 113,000 years ago. I've just learned how to use tools, so I can dig now. I've fashioned myself a digging device, which I don't know what I'm doing with it, but I'm digging. I'm just doing something
made out of musical instruments.
And it's embarrassing because my dad's unreal in the garden, and I'm actually, I need to make a public service announcement and apologize to my parents for dragging their names through the dirt last week and saying that they had porn in their house. I'm so sorry that I did that to you and I dragged the family's name through the dirt. I hope you can find it in your hearts to forgive me.
That apology is as sincere as whenever I say, Jack, stop hitting your sister. Say you're sorry. And Jack goes, sorry.
It never changes. My dad got onto me to say, I never watched that video. The only time I ever saw it again was when we were changing the sock drawer. And I realized that one of you had just left the box in it and had taken the video out for years. So, I endeavor this week to make my parents proud and not drag the family name through.
I did think, as you were telling that story, it wasn't a quick story either. You were talking about your mum and dad's porn collection for a long time.
It wasn't their porn collection. My mother did have a dirty book in her bookshelves.
Sorry, don't do it again.
In her room.
Don't do it again.
It was a Jilly Cooper book. It was like the 1980s equivalent of 50 Shades of Grey.
There's going to be another apology next week.
No, but this is like a regular book. Like, and I used to go up there every once in a while and read passages in it. It was set in a polo club in America where there was awful stuff going on. And I remember thinking, like, when I got a bit older, that, like, I was wondering if you pulled the dirty book out of the bookshelf, that the bookshelf would swing around. I mean, like, this old staircase that would go down to, like, this sort of a dungeon down.
Your dad's locked up.
He's chained to the wall. Sorry, I'm sorry.
Sorry, Dad. Sorry,
Dad. But gardening. So I've been trying to make him proud in the garden, and I got a power hose. And I'm now a different person. Power.
Wow. I'm planning on getting one.
Oh, man. The power. Mm. I've been just power hosing everything and anything that moves.
Or the babies. Like, the babies.
Or like, will you give the babies a bath? And I was like, light them up. No, I thought they'd be too pussies. They wouldn't be able to take the power. and I realized that most jobs that I'm good at around the house have the word power in the title, like power hosing.
Yeah, just get started.
Power napping.
Mm-hmm.
Or less.
That's not a job. That's not a job around the house.
She said it wasn't a job around the house, but I differ. I had one more. Power pissing.
It's a stretch.
Do you know when you wake up in the middle of the night and you might have, for some reason, have a boner in the middle of the night. And then you try and take a piss, and you burst him for a piss. But you're
because you went to bed reading your mum's book.
And your body's like a right angle with your boners, and you're trying to like bend yourself in half because you're pissing like a laser. Your piss is so, it's like zing.
Like a bar hose.
Yeah, it's like, so I'm very good at that.
Yeah.
It's tricky enough. But other than that, yeah, I've been watching. So I'm going to give you my latest TV stuff quickly, and then we'll move on and we'll get Dave McHugh on the phone to see what all the rugby players are up to. So speaking of the Jewish community, have you seen Unorthodox on Netflix?
No.
Great show.
Anyway, oh, man. Not good.
Not good.
To watch it.
It's about the Hasidic community in New York City and this girl who's trying to escape from it because it's quite controlling and she's quite artistic. So she's been had an arranged marriage. She's married. He's a bit of a lunatic, and they're all lunatics. Well, in their own right, they're not. But from our perspective, they look mad. And she moves to Berlin to try and pursue a life in music, and it is. It's only four episodes long, and I recommend it for like a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, where you're kind of at that part of your week where you're getting stuff done and you're a little bit more reserved and you're thoughtful, right?
Yeah. I feel like you sent through something else the other day, your man Core, some documentary.
Jim Core's latest. Core. Yeah.
And I feel like I was telling you that I'm loving isolation. I'm loving it because it's a time to unwind and spend time with family and not feel under pressure to be productive with your days and put yourself under pressure. Mm-hmm. Apart from when I get a text from you. It's always like, watch Goodwill Hunting, listen to REM Automatic for the People, watch the documentary on conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
A couple other things. You are the only one putting me under pressure these days.
It's good for you. You keep you on your toes.
I honestly, I've got a list. I've always got a to-do list. Most of them are things that you have me to watch.
Well, you Curb Your Enthusiasm was my recommendation for everyone. Should watch Curb Your Enthusiasm in the morning for the morning coffee. Just sit there and watch an episode of it because
it's my favorite thing at the minute.
It's unbelievable. He's the funniest.
And Larry David came out and said to something to the effect of, stay at home. But he said, you're missing a wonderful opportunity to stay in the house and watch TV.
Do nothing.
Like, Larry, you're spot on.
He is. He's a genius, man.
The other thing is, the other reason why there's no pressure is because, and Anna pointed this out, no one's ever going to call at the door. So you never have to have the house tidy, or you never have to...
It's no distraction.
No one's ever going to interrupt you. It's brilliant. I'm loving it. Do you want a quick cat update?
Oh, yes.
So a few of the lesser cats, the less favorited cats, they've kind of fallen by the wayside. So it's Ginger and Reva are the two main cats that come around.
What's the second one you say, Reva?
Reva.
What do they look like?
One looks is Ginger. Ginger and Stripey. We don't think that's her name. It might be.
Oh, Reva's her name. I thought that was a type of cat.
Oh no. No, Reva is like kind of brown stripey. But Ginger was around the other night, and I'm not really a cat person. I'm only kind of getting to know cats. And Ginger was walking around, we were barbecuing and we were sitting outside. Ginger was walking around strutting her stuff. And I noticed I couldn't not look at her ass. And I noticed
just as long as you weren't getting a boner, it's fine.
I noticed her ass looked like a MIDI port, MIDI port, like a you know, the port like for musical instruments going into computers. I only come across this last week because I was kind of trying to record.
It's like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I thought, like, for you, you know, is that a big thing for you? Because you're obviously very musical. Are those two amazing things in your life, like cats and recording music?
I haven't tried to stick a MIDI wire up my cat's ass, if that's what you're asking.
Get into the cat's ass, play away, and then the cat will sing the song.
I've got a little MIDI keyboard. It's like got 12 keys on it. So I just sit there like this playing it. And the cat is here next to me, plugged into it.
Yeah.
Will it just sing in meows? Meow, 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 meow. Wow. There, you are really coming into your own in isolation. That's the best thing you've ever said, I think. Well done.
Thanks. I've said better.
I don't know. Two of my favorite things combined.
Yeah. One other quick observation. The NHS clap, the appreciation clap on Thursday nights at 8 p.m.
Why?
What do you mean? No, I'm introducing the topic. Everybody goes out and does the NHS or to the
HS. Oh, yeah, yeah.
The appreciation clap, stand at your front door and clap.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I noticed? It's like facing the haka. No one wants to be the first to turn and go back into their house.
You don't want to just, yeah, yeah, okay.
So everybody just keeps clapping. Then it gets awkward.
You start pulling weeds out of the front of your lawn or something.
It's like the standoff between Wales and the All Blacks that time. Remember, Wales didn't turn their backs?
Yeah.
And they all just stared at each other. Oh, it wasn't Nigel. Who was it? The ref, whoever the ref was panicking.
Yeah.
It's like, this game's never going to start.
Yeah. I didn't know that was a thing that you can't until I saw that recently.
Yeah. I don't know if it still is a thing. It was back then. But I think Wales kind of drew attention to it. And then they realized, well, this is going to be the start of every time any team ever plays the All Blacks. So we have to stop it.
Put an end to it. Very good.
Pat'll be happy. That's a wee bit of rugby there.
Yeah. All righty. Well, look, as I said, we have a great show for you. We've got Dave McHugh joining us on the line. We've got Will Addison. We're also going to talk about Munster versus Sale 2006, because as many platforms are doing, they're showing games at the moment, classic games, and everyone's tuning in to watch them at the same time, which was very enjoyable the other night. And actually, over the next few weeks, Virgin Media Sport are going to start showing classic Ireland matches from the Six Nations. This weekend, they're showing on Friday night the Guinness Six Nations 2020 story so far. Then they're showing Ireland versus England from Croke Park. Then they're showing Wales versus Ireland Grand Slam 2009. Saturday, England versus Ireland 2004, where we beat the world champions. And then England versus Ireland 2006, the Triple Crown. And England versus Ireland 2010, another Triple Crown. Then Sunday, the Grand Slam all day from 2018. Wow, that's going to be class. So we might talk about a few of them next week, see how many we can get in. But in the meantime, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with David McHugh.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
Now we're joined by Dave McHugh from Lineup Sports. Dave, thanks a million for joining us, man. Where in the world are you, and how's isolation going?
I'm at home in Ranelagh, morphing from the new week of yesterday, today and tomorrow.
Yeah, we're all getting used to it, Dave. Are you, obviously, things are difficult at the minute for everybody, financially, economically, everything. But for yourself, are you trying to see this as a nice opportunity to relax, to maybe just slow down a little bit, enjoy some time with family, get the silver lining?
Yeah, like it's kind of weird. You kind of go through a roller coaster of emotions from worrying about the commercial side of the business and how long this actually might go on for. But it's also in some ways been a nice time to disconnect and reflect. And, you know, it's always good to take some time away and take a macro view of the business and the industry and try and decide what you're going to do next and how you're going to do it. The challenging part of this is that none of us have a crystal ball, and we don't really know what the short, medium, and long-term impacts of this pandemic are on the sports industry. And it's only a tiny part of what's going on in the world.
The impact, as you say, we don't know how long this is going to go on. We don't know how devastating this is going to be to sport or rugby in general. But am I right in saying that Irish rugby is probably slightly safer, or the provinces are slightly safer, and then that they've got the support of the IRFU and every club in England or every club in France, they're on their own? Is there something to that?
Yeah, it certainly has highlighted another benefit of the centrally contracted system, in that there ultimately is one financial support in the background. Again, depending on the length of the break in play or the break in sport will determine the impact it will have on gate receipts or sponsorship or television rights. And I think the IRFU and the ORCPI moved very swiftly to address the players' concerns around payment, and certainly the deferring of their salaries is a more positive outcome perhaps than some of the English and French clubs, which act as limited companies and are somewhat siloed.
Yeah, okay. So then let's get into the individual players then, because Easton Siwa put something up on Facebook a week or two ago, and he said, spare a thought for the guys who are retiring. So obviously that's an emotional thing, really, because guys maybe don't get the send-off that they would like. But what about the slightly more tangible, hard-hitting impact of guys who are maybe playing for a contract?
Yeah, I think it's difficult, of course. I think, you know, because of our partnership with eSportif and the fact that it functions very well, there's a finite number of players only in our group whose futures are somewhat undetermined, and it's ones and twos. I think it depends on the stage of your career, and I think the medium to long-term impact will probably have an impact on the salaries that clubs will pay in the future. So there's a few guys in limbo, but it's in the minority.
What about the academy players, Dave? We heard that they were supposed to get an update on their positions on March 31st, and I haven't heard anything about that. Where are they standing?
Truthfully, I'm not 100% sure. My understanding was in the announcement from ORCPI and IRFU that players who were paid below a threshold, that their income was not going to be impacted. Now, how will they draft for next season's academy and sub-academy? I think it would be very difficult at the moment to determine how that will work.
I presume transfers and stuff like that, a lot of that will be put on hold as well. Or would a lot of those been done already earlier in the season?
Again, I can only speak from our perspective, and our, you know, system with eSportif means that we have the majority of our players secured for next season.
Okay.
When do the contracts typically run to the end of June, Dave, is that right?
Yes.
So if this delay, like obviously it's all hypothetical at the minute, no one really knows what's going to happen, but if one of the potential things they were talking about was just running playoffs in June or July, if things run on till July, potentially could any new signings for next year, for example, Ulster could potentially play Albie Mathewson and who else have they signed?
John Madigan.
Madigan. Could they play those two if it runs into next, like whenever they're technically contracted?
Ian Madigan. Sorry.
Again, I can't answer that question entirely, because I don't know what the future looks like and whether we're still going to have restrictions on travel in June. You know, certainly they're talking about a relaxation from May onwards from the restrictions that we're currently facing. But it may take longer to see a resumption of international travel. So if Albie Mathewson has to travel from New Zealand, it's probably a bigger issue as to whether he's able to. You know, and like every person on the planet, the future looks like people in the short term will have to quarantine for a couple of weeks if they travel internationally. So I'm not really too sure how it's going to affect players who are traveling from outside the island of Ireland.
Take us back to the start of your career, Dave. You were manager of Leinster for was it 4 or 5 years, from 2002 to 2007. What gave you the initial idea to set up Linus Morris and to move in that direction?
What gave me the idea? I mean, I had the dream job in many ways, and I had, I think, 6 seasons with Leinster, 4 different coaches. Began under Matt Williams, Gary Ella, Declan Kidney, Michael Cheka, and thoroughly enjoyed my time there, and in some ways miss it still. But I got to a point in my own life where I needed to be a little bit more in control of, you know, who I was, what I wanted to do. And there's a little bit of Groundhog Day, and you guys will know from playing, it's not dissimilar in the backroom team. And I had a very good mentor, Paul McNaughton, who was director of rugby in Leinster at the time. And he, you know, like most career coaching models, he sort of said, what are you good at? What do you enjoy? And, you know, what do you want to do? And the things that I enjoyed were the player side of things and looking after their requirements off field. And the piece that I added to that was the fact that I had a business and marketing background, and as a former high performance sailor, had a huge interest in sponsorship. And I took a bit of a leap of faith in 2007, which was just before Leinster started winning trophies. And just before, I'm going to say the last recession, but it looks like we're going to have to go through another one now. Mm. It was really just about trying to take control of what I was good at, what I enjoyed, and where I wanted to get to. So the first 5 or 6 years were particularly tough. And then we've had a very good 5 or 6 years and grown the business and the profile. And who knows what's going to come next, because we're likely to go into some form of recession beyond this. And I think sport will recover, but it'll be slower than other industries.
Yeah, I suppose the gathering of people getting back together, it's the same for me with music and stuff. I look at it the same. It's when will we get back on the stage? Who knows? I think people might be a bit more reluctant to gather in big numbers, but at the same time, it's so important for us all to get back to doing things like that. And do you think, I know, again, this is another hypothetical question, but do you think they'd play these games behind closed doors? Like there's been some suggestions. Do you think that could be a possibility?
Well, again, in the short term, if it's a case of finishing leagues or cups or in any sport, that there is an argument that if the government of the various countries relax the restrictions around gatherings or groups of people being in the same place for a long time, that it is a possibility. I guess it all comes back to when the season will resume. And in the same vein, you know, if we're going to read between the lines from the press around international rugby, it looks like there could be quite a hectic sort of Q3, Q4 of 2020, where there'll be a lot of test games, but will fans be allowed travel? So certainly playing the games gives us live sport, but it doesn't give us gate receipts. And it may be a step towards resuming to mass gatherings. But again, the word hypothetical, you know, we don't know, and we've got to follow the government guidelines nationally and internationally. So if you're a French team and you've got to travel to the UK, or an English team and you've got to travel to Ireland, et cetera, it's going to be very much dependent on a collaborative approach of multi-nations or multi-countries.
Mm. And how about your own players then? Would you be in touch with them much over the last few weeks?
Yeah, I mean, a bit like this, modern technology gives you a good opportunity to stay in touch. You know, we initially circulated a lot of online courses and books to read and things that guys could be doing. I suppose, like us all, it took a week or two or maybe three to settle into a bit of routine. But quite a few of the guys I'd be in touch with daily or every second day. House party, FaceTime, Zoom is a great way to stay connected. And I think everybody, whether we're in business or with families or sports people, are all settling into a bit of a routine or this new normal.
Everybody's
certainly in Irish rugby, the guys all have very specific programs that they're undertaking. Most have home gyms. Most are seeing that the mental benefits of training are equally important to the physical benefits. But the longer this goes on, I suppose the less conditioned that sports people will become to competitive action.
Yeah, it's that, as you say, that club connection, that social connection. We were talking to Jamie Cairns, the Munster doctor, last week, and he was saying it's just so important to keep lads stimulated, because these guys who thrive, these are guys who thrive in a team environment. So everybody's becoming very tech savvy with, as you say, house party, Zoom, Skype, everything. We even had a family call on Zoom the other day with my mother-in-law and his mom and dad. And so she's working away on Zoom. And this is the same lady who we went on holidays a few years ago and she said, keep in touch and send me an internet.
Yeah, it is different. You know, and we've been trying to be as creative as we can as well in terms of the information that we're providing the athletes with. And that's up wider than just the rugby group, you know, good books to read, ways to develop on a personal level, ways to upskill. Quite a few of the guys using the time to get stuck into college and finish stuff that they've maybe been deferring. Josh Van der Fleer, James Ryan, certainly be two that have see education as a really good way to spend their time. I think the training bit is important for them all. And this new way of communicating essentially is socialization for the short term. There's obviously groups of players that are living together and have been isolating together. So, you know, I'm sure they're getting a bit bored of each other, but you know, such is life.
Yeah, exactly. So with those, with the players that you have, you know, when I was playing, it's a long time ago now, and I think sports agents was a new term and it was a new profession, and there was only one or two within the country back when I first met an agent. I actually remember meeting an agent for the first time and he said, Baz, my man, I don't know whether to represent you as a rugby player or as a singer, because I hear you've got the X Factor. And I was just like,
trying to sell you a monorail.
It was exactly. He was wearing the candy stripe suit and all that. So it was what you might see in the movies as a sports agent. But you seem to be covering a hell of a lot more than just the contract side of things. It's a you know, you're covering every spoke of the wheel by the way you're talking.
Well, it's certainly trying to. You know, when I started this business in 2007 or late 2006, there were 38 rugby agents in Ireland, but there was still only 160 players.
Right.
Everybody wants to be an agent, and everybody thinks it's glamorous, and you know it's cool, and you know the Jerry Maguire analogy gets used all the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think what I tried to do was to do it differently and take a kind of more holistic viewpoint that our responsibility is to support athletes off field and to help them in every aspect of their life, you know, on field via contract, but off field in terms of, like we discussed, personal development, education, preparation for transition, mentoring, advice. And there was an agent at the time who said to me at the time, you can never be friends with the people you represent. And I said, actually, I totally disagree with that. I think the better that you know somebody, the more you can get out of them and the better you can support them. And I think it's through that relationship that you get the most out of people. And I always tell the lads, I'm here to help you help yourself. And we made a decision about 4 years ago to outsource the contract negotiation side of our business. So we now use eSportif, who are probably the largest global rugby agency. They have market intelligence in all the territories. They have individuals in every market who has relationships with the clubs, directors of rugby, coaches. And it's become much more scientific in the last 5 or 6 years. Like most things, it's data driven. So at any point in time, eSportif can provide a list of off-contract players, clubs looking for players in position. Because of their scale, a pretty broad and accurate salary comparison. But I think, again, it comes back to the word relationships. And in each territory, their principal has excellent relationships with DORs, and CEOs, head coaches, etc. So for me, it makes negotiation piece very simple. It makes it very creditable. And it's about doing good, smart business. And like all negotiation, it has to end in a win-win. So what that allows us to do is ensure the player has the best on-field service in terms of maximizing their value through what we believe is the best company in the world to do that. And then it allows us focus on our strengths, which is the personal development and the management and obviously the commercialization of those individuals. And it takes a bit of a drill down and it takes time to get to know individuals, to know what they're good at, to know what they enjoy, to know where their strengths are and subsequently their weaknesses. And then it's about trying to create opportunities for them over the time of their playing career, but also to support them at the transition part of that career. And I remember one particular rugby player who retired 2 years ago saying to me, "Does this mean I don't get access to you anymore?" I said, "No, absolutely. It's quite the opposite." So what we did over the last couple of years was we were able to use this model to attract the likes of Conor Murray and Joey Carberry and James Ryan and Tadhg Furlong and Dan Levy and all the up-and-coming talented players. And by providing them with the support of eSportif in terms of negotiating their on-field contracts, we were able to provide them essentially with the full service. And that's what differentiates it from being a traditional agency model, where they come in at the time when you require a job. And I remember Philippe Cantapomi saying to me about 10 years ago, you know, you only need an agent when you need a job. But you still need people around you.
I think that's easy for someone to, like Philippe, maybe because he's at the top of the game and he was very much in demand, right? But I often felt when I was playing that when it just came down to contract negotiation for your agent, there was always a sense that your agent is also representing X amount of players that potentially are in the same position as you. And even though they might be in the same province, you are still negotiating with the RFU at the end of the day. So it was always just a hunch that I had that maybe you're being bargained or you're getting, "I'll give you this guy if you give me X amount more for this fella." That's how I felt. I never felt, you know, and I think what you've just described is so much more clear. And when you take the contract negotiations out of it, what I think I would have benefited most from is the what you can offer someone, as you said, aside from that.
And I think as well, it allows me to sit on the side of the player throughout the contract negotiation as a sense check or a sounding board. And I think as agency has evolved, you know, there isn't that, you know, stigma of horse trading. If you take Andrew Trimble and you pay him this, we'll get you Barry Murphy and we'll pay him that. That doesn't really exist. It's much more
no
scientific.
Deal. No deal.
But it's far more scientific now and it's far more transparent.
Yeah.
Whereas, and possibly the reason I ended up outsourcing this was because, you know, if we had a player who required a job, the first thing we did was ring the people we knew. So if I had Barry Murphy coming off contract, and I said, "Right, who do I know? I'll ring Declan Kidney. I'll ring David Humphreys. I'll ring Guy Easterby. I'll ask them, you know, what are your requirements? You know, are you looking for a player in this position?" And for me, the whole thing became much more scientific. You know, why wouldn't you use a company that specializes, that has the relationship, that has the data, that can negotiate and has a track record? And it takes a huge piece away from us then and just allows us focus on the person, which is the piece that I enjoy, which is how I ended up in this. Because I always believe that if you're good at something, you enjoy it, you get better. But if you're doing stuff that you don't enjoy, like sitting in front of a club or a union, negotiating and, you know, trying to get the best deal, never knowing if it's the best deal because you never know what anybody else is on. So I think dispelling that myth that, well, if he represents five players who play out half, you know, there's Chinese walls, or I'm not getting the best value. It means that you know the value of five players in the test game plus the wider network. So you never are very unlucky to be on the same cycle as somebody else. And you're you're more than likely not on the same development cycle or age grade or on-field caps. So I think for me, it gives far more confidence in the model that if you represent a player here, here, and here, they know you know what you're doing.
Yeah. you're dealing with each part of a player's career, and I suppose you're gaining experience on how to deal with different. And I know everyone's different, but
yeah. And at the end of the day, we're just managing people, and we all have the same fears, insecurities, challenges, you know, highs and lows, and it's about trying to help athletes with that aspect of their life, so that when they go and do what they do, or they're getting paid to play, they can focus on that and they're not worried about other stuff. Mm. So it's a little bit different. A lot of people would argue it's not as commercially viable as being a traditional agent, where you just parachute in, negotiate a contract, take a fee. But again, I just see it evolving.
Yeah.
You know, over time. And that's allowed us to attract the likes of Paul and Gary O'Donovan and Kelly Harrington and Annalise Murphy in the high performance space. And we don't generally, you know, work or look to work with every athlete out there. Very sort of selfish about the fact that if I'm going to share my time and my expertise, I want to do it with people I enjoy spending time with.
Right.
You know, so Andrew, for instance, we've built up a great relationship over the years. It's mutually beneficial. And it's never work because I enjoy his company, you know, and it's a good partnership. Isn't that right, Andrew?
Yeah, everyone.
Everyone's a winner.
How much am I bringing his good name through the shit now, man? Am I affecting his brand negatively in any way?
Far from it. You guys have a really nice blend, you know, really nice blend.
Well, that's great. Well, look, I loved that chat, man. That was great, and great to get an update on what you're doing. And it's really important. I'm glad the players that you have got that kind of approach. So thanks for taking the time. We'll leave you back.
Well, thanks for having me on, gents. Yeah, back to sharpening crayons, cutting out things from magazines, and at least the sun shining. I mean, that's been one of the big positives. Is the weather's been good the last couple of weeks, so exactly. It's a great opportunity to get outdoors and, you know, spend time with your kids.
Nice one, Dave.
We'll leave you back to that, Dave. Thanks so much, my man.
Look after yourself, man. Stay safe.
You too, Dave. See ya.
All the best. Take care. Bye-bye.
COVID-19 or coronavirus is here. By taking a few simple steps, we can slow the virus down and help protect everyone. Wash your hands more often, for at least 20 seconds with soap and water. If you cough or sneeze, use a tissue or cover your mouth with your elbow, then bin the tissue and wash your hands. Avoid touching your eyes, nose and mouth. And keep surfaces clean. Distance yourself at least 2 meters, 6 feet away from other people, especially those who might be unwell. Stop shaking hands or hugging when saying hello or greeting other people. For updated factual information and advice, go to hse.ie or call 1850 24 1850. Protection from coronavirus. It's in our hands.
Well, one Irish player that flew out of the country when the season was put on hold and is Ulster and Ireland fullback Will Addison, who flew back to the family farm in England and has just shown us blisters on his hands from all the... Look at those. So, what's that from doing? Because I get blisters pointing.
That's not from the farm. That's from me spending a bit too much time alone, I'd say. I was putting in some fence posts the other day. I tried to do a really impressive video to look like it was a home workout, but my phone fell flat on its face and I was just left hammering on my own. So yeah, I was just putting some fence posts in.
So does the internet get in the way of proper farming? Yeah, social media.
It does. I'm not quite used to either farming or social media, so I'm not very good at either.
Okay, so where is the family farm?
So we're up just underneath Scotland in a county called Cumbria. So Dad's family has been farming here for about 400 years, so a long time. And then all my Irish family are obviously farming as well. So they're in Monaghan and Enniskill and all farming. And then my English family are all over here farming as well. So we're all busy with that.
Your Irish family, Will, I must say, I took your Irish family with a pinch of salt. I thought you were as Irish as...
CJ.
Yeah. Exactly. But then I met you, I was chatting to you after the Claremont game on your
mom. Yeah.
What is that accent? It's an Ulster accent, but whereabouts is that?
So she grew up in Enniskillen, actually in Cash, where I think a few of the lads used to holiday and stuff like that. And then she was in Enniskillen until she was 18, 19, and then went to Trinity for uni. And then she ended up coming to England for work and then met my dad, and then he snatched her back to the farm.
That was that. So, that was the end of
it. That was that. And then she's probably lost a little bit of the accent, but yeah, it's probably a bit lost like mine now.
Okay. But she's comfortable on the farm, and so are you. So what kind of farming are you doing?
We're a dairy farm, so we're an organic dairy, but we've got a bit of beef and some fat lambs at the moment. But I'm tasked with milking cows at the moment. So I had my missus in the milking parlour the other day, so she had a crack at that. So, yeah, we're all mucking in.
Wow. So is that up at 5 o'clock in the morning and in the milking parlour or what?
Yeah, about 6 o'clock I'm up and milking. So it's pretty, I was trying to call in sick today, but it's pretty hard when you're in quarantine with your own dad, so with your own boss. So yeah, I was trying to call out on that one, but yeah, it's a 6 o'clock start most days at the minute.
Brilliant. Speaking of CJ Stander, I've seen him on his farm in South Africa, and he's like dodging sheep and and that kind of stuff. Have you been up to anything like that?
No, dad was trying to think of little things to me. I'm not a big gym goer, so it's actually quite good for me to be keeping pretty fit on the farm, because I wouldn't be lifting weights in a garage like some of the lads are. So it's quite good for me just to be lifting bales of hay and things like that. That's keeping me fit at the moment. But yeah, in terms of dodging animals, probably just my dog at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought CJ being in South Africa was a bit lame out of him dodging a sheep. I was like,
yeah,
get yourself a lump of meat and stroll out into the fucking jungle and get in front of a lion and we'll see how impressive you are.
Yeah, when in Rome, exactly.
Yeah. So,
and how are you guys keeping?
Good, man. Yeah. The only kind of manual labor that I could comparatively say that I'm doing something like you is power hosing my back wall, which is so lame in comparison to getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning milking cows.
Honestly, yeah, I think I'm dressing up what I'm actually doing. I was basically, my missus was like, I think we need to take you out of Belfast, because I was in a kind of feral state of just getting up late playing FIFA, Netflix. And I think she saw a different side of me, so I think she thought she had to get me back home and do some proper work, because I was, I was manging around in my underpants far too long. So.
But that I can relate to.
So this makes sense. This makes sense, Will, because we know that Pat has been texting everybody in World Rugby, and either you genuinely like the show and like us, or you're just way too sound for your own good. you just keep replying to Pat.
Yeah, me and Pat were talking. I think last time me and Pat were chatting about a wedding somewhere, so we're fully best mates now. Yeah.
Oh, he'd be delighted with that. Won't hear the end of that now.
He'd be talking about Will. He'd be saying, "You just don't know Will like I know Will."
That's right. We've got the same haircut.
There he is. And so, come here. When you say you're not into gym training and stuff like that, have you been given programs to do? Are you doing every day?
Yeah, the lads have been really good, actually. They're using technology pretty well. So we've got like a bit of a catch-up every Monday. We've got mini groups, and my rehab lead, Shane, he's kind of taking charge of my mini group. So we have a catch-up with him on a Monday. There's the option for Pilates, yoga, all that kind of stuff early in the morning if you want to do it. And then the lads, I'm not running at the moment, but bless the lads, they've got to do a Bronco every Friday. So they've got GPS all sent out, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I feel sorry for them. I think a few lads might attach it to the dog. Yeah, do pretty well. But I think then the equipment, so there's what bikes knocking around. Yeah, all, everything's pretty good for the lads to get hold of gym equipment. So they're going pretty well.
Broncos are that's pretty old school, Will, isn't it? Like it's I know these things kind of go full circle. After a while, something becomes cool again with S&C coaches. But Broncos and all, like an old fashioned, it's a finisher on a Friday, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think we've gone back to that kind of prison rules of just doing press ups and Broncos. That's about all we can muster at the moment. So the lads are just doing lengths of fields wherever they can find, just pacing it out. And then, yeah, the Broncos aren't fun. So I think it's 20 about. 40 back, 60 back, 5 times. So pretty tough. I think Shanna's got 420 that you said the other day, but yeah, I'm not too sure. We'll see.
Lies.
Yeah. And they're all given their GPS though, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. So one of the lads posted them all through our letterboxes about 2-3 weeks ago. So we're no room to hide actually in this quarantine time. So yeah, no, tough for the lads, but they're digging in.
Just strap one onto the dog, man, and just drive around the tractor chasing them around. Like, wow. Will is flying us.
Boys are trading through the roof. Yeah, no, that'll be the way.
Yeah, and how,
so I might have to try that.
How is the injury, man? How far off are you from running?
Yeah, good. I think we're basically just, I'm probably one of the lucky ones, like other lads who have got knocks and bruises, that we're probably not going to get an opportunity to rest like this again. So yeah, my calf, which I was suffering with in the Six Nations, that's fully healed. And then all the other aches and pains are ticking away at the moment. So I think it's just more just using it as a chance to get extra healing and robustness in us. And then I'm out on the bike, and then I think probably the next few weeks I'll be into running again.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no rush with this kind of thing. So just kind of taking every week and just doing, actually the farm's keeping me well fit. So just ticking away with that at the minute.
Is everybody kind of thinking we may as well take the break now while we have it? Because if the season obviously gets extended, then there'll be very little downtime between over the end of the season and start of next season. Obviously no one but take a break while it's there. Is that what the general?
I think so, yeah. I think there's not going to be the opportunity to rewind like this and just take a minute to breathe. So I think everyone's either taking it as a chance to improve something outside of rugby, whether that's Call of Duty or learning a language, I don't know. But I think the lads have been encouraged to try and do some sort of self-development, and then just using it as a time to let the body heal, and then we'll start ramping up the training as we get closer to any prospective dates we've got to get back into proper organised training.
And then in terms of the season itself, it's been, a stop-start season for you with a few injuries.
Yeah, it's been a bit, well, obviously it seems a long time ago since the World Cup, but it was disappointing not to make the plane in the end. But as it happened, I had a bit of an injury just once the lads had landed, and I think there was an opportunity maybe for me to end up over there, and then unfortunately I had an injury of Ulster. So yeah, it's been stop and start. I've really enjoyed it. Like, it's always an aim of ours to reach knockout rugby and whatever we do. And I think where we were in a quarter final with Toulouse, and then we were looking like we were going to get knockout rugby in the Pro 14 as well. So no, a successful season overall. And when I did play for Ulster, I really enjoyed it. It's just one of those stop start campaigns, and then you don't really expect one of those stop to be a worldwide pandemic, but that's the way it goes.
Yeah. And what is the vibe over in England at the moment? And with the pandemic, it's getting quite serious there in terms of the number of cases and the number of deaths.
Yeah, so my sister, she's up from London at the moment, so she's doing that. So she's back at the farm now working, but I think she's just been put on furlough, so she's going to have a bit more time on her hands. And then my brother's actually, he's an engineer, he got the brains of the family, so he's actually designing ventilators at the moment.
Oh, wow.
So he's really, really full on. So he's working 9 to 9 at night. So, he's pretty full on. So, yeah, I feel pretty guilty just here twiddling my thumbs watching Netflix when he's off doing that kind of stuff. So, it's very serious. I'm in a neck of the woods that is so quiet, really, that I think people have used it as an escape from the city. So it's actually a little bit busier here than it normally is. But in terms of me coming home, it's as normal, really. I'd normally, if I was at Sale, I'd have come up the road, worked on the farm, so it doesn't feel any different to me, really.
Is that a big was a big rugby family then? You grew up in Will with your brother and sister and father. Is that something you've grown with since you were a kid?
Yeah. So my dad's got 3 siblings, 2 of which are brothers, who've all got young lads. So we all live in the same village as well. It's very Cumbrian. It's very similar to Fermanagh, my other side of the family. We've all got webbed feet, that kind of thing. So we all live in the same area. So actually yesterday was a bit of an interesting one. We normally have like a big Easter egg hunt in the family because there's about 20 of us all in the one village. And my uncle, he's real creative. So he did like a James Bond themed one 2 years ago, and attached like a tractor battery to a dog cage. And I'd hid all the Easter eggs inside this dog cage, which had to crack a code to get into. And then one of the dogs actually brushed its nose up against the cage and got a huge electric shock. So we missed out on an Easter egg. We actually did a little one yesterday, but it was like a social distancing one. So we set up different like little clues around the farm and things like that for different members of our family to go and follow. So we kept out of each of us. So my contribution was attaching one of my cuddly toys from when I was a baby was Simba, the lion. So I managed to strap him to a rock face that we have on the farm. And then I had a load of toy cows. So I put those underneath like the stampede in The Lion King. So they had to find a way to there and save Simba. And he had an egg inside him. So that was about as exciting as we've got. But yeah, there's loads of family around. And we were all mad into rugby or hockey or football, whatever it is. So we've got a very competitive sports family and all used to knock into each other, make each other cry when we were younger. So we're all still playing sport now.
Wow. That's hilarious.
That's
man.
Pretty cool.
And did you, was professional sport always the goal for you as a kid? Was it always rugby? Were there other sports that you were kind of interested
like
in?
No, I kind of played everything I could really. So I actually used to ski to quite a high level. So we used to do ski racing on a Saturday. There's an area called Kendal. So I used to go every Saturday night. I used to do dry ski slope slalom skiing. Yeah, pretty random. So I used to do football on a Saturday morning, skiing on a Saturday night, and then rugby on a Sunday. And my brother would have been the same. So I think that's
skiing where?
So there's an area called Kendal. It's a little town, probably half an hour away from me here. And they had a dry ski slope, which is about 200 meters long. We used to do slalom down there. And then I used to do like kind of a few other competitions around the north of England as well. And then I think if rugby hadn't worked out for me, I'd have ended up ski instructing somewhere in Austria or something like that. But the way things went, I got my academy contract at Sale and then headed down there. But no, probably rugby wasn't always the plan. I think I was always really keen on it. But when I was 15 or 16, I was actually in Newcastle Falcons catchment area. And it was at that stage where you ever get picked up or you don't. And the Newcastle Falcons academy people there were like, no, we're not too keen on you. You don't like to make tackles. You haven't got a good pass, la-di-da. So I kind of got dropped away by them. And then by chance, a Sale academy manager, he was watching some rugby camp I was on in the summer. And he just asked if I fancied coming down. So they had to ask Newcastle permission to get hold of me. And then, yeah, ended up playing for their second team when I was 16, 17. And then, yeah, ended up playing for them. So no, it wasn't really an organised plan. And then even when I got my academy contract at Sale, my mum was like, you have to do university, otherwise I'm not letting you go down to Manchester. So I kind of had to keep ticking away with university at the same time. So it was never the plan up until I played my first game for Sale, really.
Mm. Have you skied in recent years? Have you been allowed to ski?
No, I don't know if I should say this, but I snuck off when I was at Sale with a few of my mates one time. So we've snuck off, but I'd like, obviously, you know that how tightly things are run over in Ireland. So I don't think I'd be able to get away with it now. But there was one time that me and two of the other lads, we drove down to London to play London Irish. And then we were like, oh yeah, we had a week off in the season. So we're like, oh, we'll go away somewhere. So our manager didn't know where we were. So I drove us to France and from London. And then we ended up skiing. He found out, Steve Diamond. And he said, I heard you skiing. I said, I'm in Verbier. So we ended up driving from France to Switzerland to ski with him. So I managed to get away with it without injuring myself. But I then pulled out of the game when I got back. So it wasn't very successful. Oh. But so no, but it was real good fun. I love skiing and hopefully I'll get back to it after I'm finished up.
Yeah, we skied a lot when we were growing up and I hadn't skied in years. And there was one year I was coming back from an injury. And a few mates of mine and my wife, they were all going on a skiing trip. So we joined them. And I planned to just go and just like chill out, get coffees, you know, take it easy and go for walks or whatever. And then we got there and I kind of fancied a wee bit of a ski. And my wife was pregnant at the time as well. So she was really nervous. So the two of us were nervously kind of skiing around. And I had the old Ulster avalanche jacket. And it had AT really obviously on the front of it. And I came down and I was arriving at this lift and I saw Johnny Bell, Mark McCall and David Humphreys all standing at the bottom of the lift. McCall and Humphreys had obviously moved on. There was Harrison's and Gloucester, but Johnny Bell was there, took a video of me arriving and put it into the WhatsApp group in the team. So yeah.
Ned.
Yeah,
my experience is very similar. Me and Steve Diamond were sat on a ski lift, and I basically hadn't played the previous 2 weeks because I had a little hammy tweak, and we were sat on the ski lift going up the mountain. And he's like, "Oh, well, you're skiing now, so you'll be grand for the game next week, won't you?" I'm like, "Yeah, no trouble." And then in the warm up, I had to pull out because my hammy tightened up. So it was a nightmare. But no, I would love it. It's a great holiday, isn't it? So
there was never much threat of becoming a professional skier and growing up in Limerick City. I must tell you, lads, I can't really relate to this. I'd love to see my father's face if I turned around to him at 14 and said, I'm going to be a professional skier, actually.
I wish I hadn't brought it up because I've actually got a ski person on my T-shirt, so I seem like the biggest nerd in the world now.
It's all good. So, look, we're both big, massive fans of the way you play rugby and how you attack and your ability to create space. Is that something that just came to you naturally, or did someone in your development as a rugby player kind of teach you how to sit down a defence and how to create that kind of space around you?
I was probably one of those greedy players when I was younger that I always just loved running with the ball, and probably in the area I was living in, I'd be not the best player going. I was never the best player when I was younger, but I think I always relied on me doing something in a game to try and make something of nothing. So I've always enjoyed that. And then when I went professional, I went to Sale. Steve Diamond was brilliant for that. He was always just like, no, just pick your head up and back yourself. There's never a bad... And I think one good bit of advice I actually got from Danny Cipriani, which he got off Sean Edwards, was whatever your first thing that comes into your head, just back that decision. Once you start second-guessing things and have four different thoughts in your head, you'll probably make a mistake. So I've always just had the mindset, if I see something, I'll have a crack at it. And more than likely, because you back your skill level, you back your ability, it'll come off. Whereas if you start to be nervous and overthink things and overanalyze things, I mean, that's when you get a bit rigid and you don't really flow in the game.
You play a bit of 13 and 15, Will.
Yeah.
You prefer a bit more space at 15, do you?
Yeah, I think so. This is the first season I've actually played at 15. Before that, I've only played the odd game every season in case someone's had an injury. So 13 was always my favourite position and probably still is at the moment. But I think we'll end up enjoying 15 more because of that little bit more space. And then there's probably a little bit more time to read the game. I think what I've learned is that in 13, you're always involved in the game. You've always got something to do in defence, whether that's talking to people inside and outside of you. And in attack, you've always got the ability to have an influence. Whereas 15, sometimes you could just probably put down a seat and just watch the game go by for a little bit. So you can kind of lose yourself in the game sometimes. So it's always a bit of a challenge for me to kind of keep watching the game, making sure I'm still involved in it. Otherwise, you can miss a moment. So no, it's something I'm learning and really enjoying the challenge of playing 15 this year. But having watched Barry when I was younger, cutting through the Sale defence, that was always the position that I used to love.
Ashed up.
You must be a lot older than I thought you were, Will.
Oh man, I can remember saying to Strings a few years ago when I was playing with Strings, I was like, whatever happened to Barry Murphy when he was playing? And he was like, ah, geez, you went downhill for a...
yeah, that was my one shining moment, and then it was all downhill after that.
We're actually
reviewing that game later on in the show, because it was streamed on the Munster supporters website during the week. So yeah. Trimby tortured himself and sat down and watched it.
No, I do remember. I can obviously the big moment was when Paul O'Connell and Donica smashed Shabal off the kickoff.
Yeah.
And then, and then obviously your try, obviously that was the highlight.
No, the highlight for me was Shabal's chip and chase.
Oh man.
Yeah.
You see that?
Yeah.
Yeah. He was interested. So basically he left the year I started when I was 16. I was driving down from here, which is about 2 hours north. And I was going into the car park and the first person I saw was Shabal coming out of the car park, but he was smoking and he was in a smart car. So I was like, oh man, this is something different. So,
oh yeah. I heard that he had a little tiny little.
Yeah, he lived in a fairly central area of Manchester and I think he quite liked the city buzz. So he used to drive a smart car and then all the lads used to say that he used to light up a fair amount as well.
That team, and probably still to an extent, like Sale is, I remember you saying it's like the Night's Watch. It's like there's so many characters of rugby, especially that 2006 team. Is there anybody stands out to you or anybody?
So... I can remember we were on a bus on the way back from, I don't know, London somewhere. And then that's when we announced our Night's Watch status because we were like, every time someone buggers up on the piss or has an incident on the field, they'll end up being sacked by the current club, and then no doubt Sale will be the one who signs them. So I can remember probably the one that stands out most would be Andy Powell, I think for obvious reasons. But I was only 19 when he arrived, and I was at that time I was really lucky that I was getting a good run in the first team, and I was like, oh, professional rugby's class, playing week in, week out. I'm only 19, still at university, and then we've just signed Andy Powell, so that'd be great for an off the pitch. And anyway, he signed, and the first trip we had away with him was away in Brive, and I was like, oh, class, I'll latch on to Powell tonight. And anyway, I ended up the night getting pepper sprayed, so I probably thought better of that. So, but oh man, there's so many good blokes that I played with, and probably characters you've got. We used to make up a team of the loose characters that we played with, and you've got kind of like Cam Shepherd, who I think you might have come across it from Australia.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
I think you played against him, Trimby, and he would have been one of my best mates, and he's the loosest guy I know. And then you've got Paolo at eight, Danny Cipriani, James O'Connor. Who else did you put in there? Marlon Yard's a loose character. All these random folk who have had pretty littered, unsuccessful past who have come to Sale and had a good time. So we've always prided ourselves on our work off the pitch, and luckily the lads since I've left have done pretty well on it, and they're probably challenging for a title now.
Yeah, they're flying, aren't they? They'll be gutted with the interruption of the season now.
Yeah, definitely, especially I think probably if it starts up all of a sudden, most of their team's over in South Africa as well, so whether they get those lads back as well. But no, they've been flying. They've been building that for a lot of time now. And I can remember when I made the choice to move, Dime said, well, just make sure you back yourself to fulfill your potential, because we're going to be building something here for sure. And that's what they've done. So, they're a brilliant club. Very old school in a lot of its ways. But they're starting to turn a corner and win games now too.
Yeah, but obviously you're in Ulster now and you're flying as well, and made two new brilliant signings for next year, Ian Madigan and Albie Matheson. What are your aspirations for over the next couple of years, both for Ulster and personally?
Probably as a team, like I've never won a senior trophy. So like one of the main reasons when Peely approached me to come over was that I wanted to be part of a winning team. And luckily that's the vision Dan's got, to be consistently compete for championships. So like you've been around Heineken Cup winning teams, and Trimby's been in early teams as well. So like I'd love to be winning a trophy at some stage. The Heineken Cup would be the pinnacle, but a Pro 14 would be a brilliant competition to win as well. So trophies are in the forefront of everyone's mind at Ulster at the moment to eventually get there. But when you compete with teams like Leinster just down the road, and the way Munster are improving, Connacht are improving, it's tough on your home soil, let alone when you get into Europe. So now that's an aspiration. Then for me, it's just to play as much international rugby as I can and be in a winning team at Ulster.
Very level-headed and very kind of you to give Munster and Connacht a mention there.
Yeah. Thanks.
Stay at home.
Well, look, man, we've taken up enough of your time, I think.
We'll
let you back to the farm, whatever the afternoon holds for you. Milking, I presume, is done. So
milking yourself?
Yeah. I've got to get rid of the blisters first. I think my missus actually isn't working today, so she wants to come out on a tractor. So we're going out working on a tractor, so we'll see how that goes.
Into a bit of hay somewhere. A bit of fooling That's around.
It. Oh man, we're sick of each other. I don't think that'll happen.
Thanks a million for joining us, man. And look, the best of luck in isolation, and we look forward to seeing you back on the pitch as soon as possible.
Thanks for having me on, lads.
Thanks, buddy. Cheers. Take it easy.
Cheers. Catch you soon.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
Okay, over the weekend, we gave you all classic homework to do. Each week, we'll be discussing classic movie, classic album, and a classic rugby match. Got some lovely ones coming up today. So we went with Automatic for the People by REM, who, as I said earlier, are celebrating 40 years as a band this week. Good Will Hunting and Munster versus Sale European Cup pool match from 2005-2006. So, Trimby, we'll start with Automatic for the People. Oh. 1992 release, I believe. I think it was REM's fourth album. They were a band 11 years at that stage.
Yeah. Was that album, it's obviously their most famous album, but it's strange for someone to have put out three albums and then peak, is it not?
I think back then it wasn't as much. Bands were allowed to evolve a little bit slower back then. Whereas I think their first album, which I have forgotten the name of, was actually the most critically acclaimed album. So they did in 1983. So they did kind of start off pretty strong as well. But this by far my favorite album, and one that, as I said, when we were talking about the Smashing Pumpkins last week, this defines an era of my life. When I listen, like, I first saw or heard of REM when Losing My Religion came out, I think it was 2 years previous. That was my first time. I think I remember hearing them, and then seeing them was the video for Shiny Happy People, which was on Out of Time, which was the previous album. Do you remember the video for that?
I do, yeah. It's one of the, I'm actually not a massive REM fan, but that's one of the things that kind of sticks out at me, that video.
Yeah, they're so unusual.
Yeah.
And they were, like, a lot of people will credit them for that, for being the first alternative rock band. I think Kurt Cobain credited them with that as well, but being kind of indie and rock. But then it was Automatic for the People, and I kind of proper fell in love with them listening to that. I remember lying in my brother's room, just listening to it start to finish, back when you properly listen to albums. Opening track, Drive, kind of reminds me of Pink Floyd, Another Brick in the Wall. It has that kind of vibe about it. Michael Stipe's vocals are just so infectious and unique, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. What were you, you texted me over the weekend, said you were nearly in tears at one of R.E.M.'s songs.
Everybody Hurts.
Yes, that wasn't the song. That was The Hangover. From whenever I get some texts from you at 1:30 and you've been at a quiz.
Yeah. 1:30 in the morning.
Right? Yeah, yeah, you've had a big night, and then you would cry at anything the next day.
Yeah, that's true. It was actually Saturday morning I was listening to that, and it was such a sad song. Jesus Christ. And especially, I was listening nearly in tears on Saturday listening to it.
Pretty ahead of its time, though. Like, I don't think, well, I don't know. Did people talk about mental health, or were people as open about it back then? Like, it's kind of a current thing in the last 5 years. People have started becoming very aware of their mental health.
I think it was just back then you would just go up into your room and listen to that song and cry it out, and then you'd be grand.
Were you like the priest on the bus listening to No Surprises?
Tommy Tiernan.
Was that Tommy Tiernan, was it?
Yeah. The End of Father Ted, yeah, exactly. But I had a laugh listening to it as well, because the Sidewinder Sleeps Tonight, it's the most quintessential REM song on the album. It just has that little bit of a drive to it. But do you ever remember trying to sing along to that for the chorus when it's like, don't even try to wake her up, don't even try. And I used to just make up the words. I don't know what the fuck you're saying. So we're like,
did you say the words are, don't even try to wake up?
Yeah.
It's only just now I found out that out. I never knew. I've never known.
No way.
Never known. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. It's very tricky.
You do always just try something, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. But I think Man on the Moon and Night. Man on the Moon is, it's up there. Brilliant song about Andy Kaufman, the comedian who, I don't know if you've seen that film that Jim Carrey plays him in, have you?
No. What is it?
It's called Man on the Moon, but that was a movie that followed this song. Andy Kaufman was a comedian, an American comedian, and this song is about him. And there's a film called Man on the Moon that Jim Carrey starred in, and there's a documentary about the making of that. So Andy Kaufman was kind of, he would do characters, and he was very much a, what's the word, method actor, where he would become the character. And Jim Carrey is quite a method actor as well. So he was being a method actor of a method actor in the film. It's phenomenal, man. So you forget, you're looking at him going, who is this again? Is Jim Carrey actually him? Do you know what I mean? You stop associating him with the actual original. It's brilliant. Watch that documentary.
Oh, but, more homework.
And then Night Swimming is like a film. It's like an entire film, start to finish, when you're listening to it. You just... I think John Paul Jones of Led Zeppelin fame wrote all the string arrangement for this album, did all the strings, and I think he must have had a lot to do with that song, because it's like an orchestra, it's a movie, it's, I love it.
Yeah, I saw that actually. I watched a 5-minute documentary on YouTube, 10-minute documentary on YouTube, and they mentioned that. I didn't realize that was such a big deal.
The song?
know that they brought your man in. I didn't realize that was kind of so significant.
Yeah, he's a genius. I also like the way they recorded it, or they wrote it. So the three other members, who are Peter Buck, Mike Mills, and Bill Berry, they wrote all the music, and Michael Stipe wasn't involved. And then they would present him with the song, with the album at the end, and he just put the lyrics over it and write actual songs. Yeah, not mad way to do it.
I assume that's not normal.
I suppose there's different ways to write. Everyone has a different way of writing a song, and there's many different ways, but I just thought that was that he's not involved in the day-to-day process of putting them together. And they have full trust in him writing the stories and, you know, what the songs are about, what the album is essentially about, because it is quite a melancholy old vibe to it. So it's obviously what he was going through. Anyway, moving on. 1997's Good Will Hunting, written by Matt Damon and starring Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. What a film. You watched it last night?
Yeah, I loved it. And I watched it not that long ago, like a couple of years ago. And I remember my feeling coming away from watching it recently, like a couple of years ago, was it's not what it was. It's not what I remember it being. It's a little bit lame. And then watched it last night. And again, it could be that. Remember, I was saying to you before about how people become more emotional watching movies on planes. And you said because there's more oxygen or something.
Oxygen. there's something about the levels of oxygen in the plane are higher. So you get a little bit of a high.
Yeah.
So you get a bit more emotional.
Yeah, I read up on this. I Googled this actually this morning because I thought it was because, I don't know, like you're out of control, or there's a vulnerability with being on a plane. So apparently there's physical things and then psychological triggers why people are more emotional, because you've got nowhere to go as well. So you kind of just have to sit and wallow in whatever is being delivered. But anyway, because of everything at the minute, because there's a heightened sense of kind of it's just slightly more emotional at the minute because everything's so serious and there's so many people struggling and it's just such a weird period of our lives in isolation, that I think that maybe the movie just connected with me a bit better. But I was I was very close to bursting into tears when Robin Williams was cuddling them, and I was like, this is amazing. It's so powerful.
I was bawling. Bawling, crying. Even though I've seen it 10 times.
You cried.
I was bawling. But from the get-go, it's like goosebumps and teary-eyed. There's no messing about. In the first 15 minutes of this film, you're like, they cut to the chase so quickly. It's like, okay, janitor, genius, hot girl, Harvard. He's trying, you know, it's like within 15 minutes, you've got it down, but you're already getting teary eyed and goosebumpy and emotional straight away. Like,
you don't find out what's wrong with him. You know, there's an issue where he's got some baggage. You don't find out till way on in the movie.
And
it comes out of nowhere as well. It's not like a big build up to a moment. It just comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
The cigarette, wounds, whatever. I think it's maybe the uncertainty. You never really find out what his backstory is, and you're always kind of wondering, like everybody else trying to work him out. It was class. It was so good. I forgot how good it was. Yeah. A couple of issues. I think his chat with Minnie Driver is a little bit lame a couple of times. Did the whole thing. And the whole thing in the bar with your man, it was a bit gimmicky. Your man with the blonde ponytail.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, it was terrible. I didn't like that scene at all.
Yeah.
And his buddies, Matt Damon's buddies, are all Casey and Ben Affleck. They're all, my guy's smart. My guy.
Yeah. I had it down as a few good scenes in it. And that's one of the, I suppose, quintessential scenes of the film. But I just didn't stand the test of time.
It's the famous scene, but it's not.
How do you like them apples? Is apples supposed to be his testicles or something like that? I don't really
know.
No,
apparently that came from World War One, where they had a mortar grenade that they threw at opposition enemy tanks, and then they were called toffee apples because of the shape of them, and they stuck to the tanks, and then they would blow up whatever, and then they would say, how you like them apples.
Oh, so he stuck it to the window. That's what he was talking about.
Well, no, he's just, it just, then it became, it didn't become about sticking something. It just became, it just became, you know, a piece of good fortune, or I'm winning over you.
All right. Jeez, that's good. That's good knowledge.
Yeah.
Good work. I also, I don't know if I talked to you about this recently, but I talked to someone about it, where the scene when himself and Robin Williams, which is probably my favorite scene, are having a little bit of crack, and they first have their, you know, they've had a couple of sessions where they're just sitting there not talking to each other. And then they have the one where they open up to each other and they start telling them a few jokes, and Robin Williams, I think, ad-libs a good bit of his stuff.
Oh, really?
The story of his wife farting in the bed and waking herself up. He came up with that off on the spot.
Did he really? Because so, Matt Damon is creasing himself.
Creasing. And you can see the camera is shaking because the yeah. cameraman is laughing so much as well, apparently. And it is like Robin Williams won an Oscar for his best supporting actor.
Oh, he won an Oscar for that. I didn't know that. Yeah. I thought Robin Williams was, he eventually, I liked that relationship eventually, but I didn't like it for the first couple of scenes or the first couple of sessions of the therapy. Because I was like, Rob Williams, he was being a bit of a buzzkill. I was like, stop talking about your dead wife.
Yeah, I suppose he's setting the tone, really. That is his life, you know what I mean? He's got no one. He's a lonely old man.
Yeah, he just brought it up one too many times.
Okay, leave it off. I also taught Minnie Driver's class. I like that they made her, that she's an English girl and she's beautiful and good crack. And I thought your man Stalisgard, the evil mathematician,
Esther, yeah,
very good.
Wasn't that evil either?
Nah, he was the bad guy in the whole thing.
He wasn't that bad. He just wanted Will to fulfill his potential.
Yeah, but all in all, brilliant film, gets our seal of approval. My favorite scene is probably the Not Your Fault scene because of the tears and the It's Not Your Fault, and it just kind of.
Yeah,
it sums it all up, doesn't it?
Yeah, but an honourable mention for the scene where him and Ben Affleck are on the construction site and they're drinking tins on the bonnet of the car. Yeah. And that's the turning point, though, because Ben Affleck's the only one who can talk sense into him. Everybody's saying the same thing, get your finger out. And Affleck's the one that he's got enough trust in that he listens to him.
Yeah, I like the way he put it as well. It's like the best part of my day is that when I pull up to your door, strange part of the day to have, when I pull up to your door and you're not there, but then you are. So someday I hope you're not. I hope you're always there, man. I hope when I turn on my Skype in the morning for the next few months, you're always here. Don't leave.
The worst part of my day is they turn up and thinking you might not be there.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you can't do anything. It's just me. I'm all you've got. Me and the twins.
Okay, finally, for my pleasure, we are going to talk briefly about Munster versus Sale in the European Cup group match 2005-2006. Look, it was my one moment in the limelight, so give me it, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't choose it. The Munster Rugby Supporters chose it as the game show the other day.
Yeah, your try was obviously brilliant. It was actually very Will Addison-esque. A little bit of a couple of goose steps, a few dummies, ball in two hands. You were ahead of your time, Barry. You know what wasn't ahead of its time? The footage was terrible.
Yeah.
The footage makes it look like you're 10 years older than it actually was.
I don't think it works on a smart TV. Did you watch it on your TV or on your laptop?
That's what it is on the smart TV. Yeah.
You got to watch it on your laptop. It was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was some night, man. And the thing that struck for me was the no phones. There's no one on a phone in the stadium. And back then it was like the atmosphere was, it was different. It was a different game. Yeah. People are just like, everyone had their part to play. The players, obviously, and the fans. Like, when the players aren't doing their bit on the pitch, when there's a break in play, the fans are doing their bit and they're creating an atmosphere. And you could see the moments when they're singing Fields of Attenborough and stuff. You could see Sheridan and a few of the Sale players are like, what the fuck is going on here? And I'll never forget that from playing in that kind of atmosphere. Yeah. It was
they were rattled. Cueto was rattled.
Wasn't he? Dowling kept pushing him and stuff and just being a general pothole to him.
And the other thing that kind of stood out to me was Rodgers' kicking was incredible. The spiral, like there was one shot one of his kicks to the right-hand touchline. I remember chatting to Johnny Sexton at one stage, and he was saying, and it was when Leinster were just starting to get the better of Munster, and Johnny was starting to get the better of Rog, and he was saying, well, you just have to look after your left-hand touchline, Rog's right-hand touchline, you have to look after that.
Right.
And that's the one, that's right-hand spiral, ball just like bends nicely and then kicks right.
Kicks right. Yeah,
and he like more so his exit kicks, like the ones that just went straight out. The flight on the ball was just a sight. No one kicks a ball like that.
No,
why? And back like then,
skill you should be teaching. And even the most famous, I suppose, moment in that game was the Chabal hit from Dunners and Paul. But if you watch before the kickoff, Paulie tells Rog like landed on Chabal.
Oh, really?
And he lands it on him like on a twopence, like the most perfect kick.
And long as well. So it was, he was getting man and ball, and he was getting man and ball on the 22.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? So that's an even tougher skill to execute.
Yeah, and the speed that O'Connell is moving at, like, you know, he was in his prime back then. He was
in his 26. Pump. Oh, yeah, just a little bit of thinning in the ginger hair.
Like you said about PNR last week, Donner's looked unbelievable, man.
Great head of hair on him.
Oh, and his skin was so perfect. Orla was like, Jesus Christ.
He was a hard throw back then, Donica.
Yeah.
And then he's got large features and he looks a bit ungainly now, I think. Here, tell me it was a shame almost that Sale got beat so badly, because they played loads of really good rugby for long periods, and then Munster just did what Munster do, just beat the crap out of them. But you have to tell me, what was the name of that play, you know, that play that you scored off where Rog kicks it and it just gets half charged down and then you collect the half charge down and then run the pitch?
Just jammy run. Do you know when you're that, you're
it's
that
like a
young
game of chess. It's like a game of chess, isn't it?
You're that young and naive, you just chase everything like a lunatic, just like chase everything Rog kicks or he'll give out to me.
What you needed to bring into your game then was more dummies. I think you needed more dummies.
Did I?
There was probably only double figures. I'd say you were just shy of double figures, dummies.
What's your man's name? Barnes.
Sure, Barnes.
Sure, Barnes was calling me the man with the squiggly step, which stuck with me for a long time after that. I don't thank him for it. What else? There was a couple more brilliant moments. The last 2 minutes. There was only substitutions made after 84 minutes. Would you believe that? No substitutions made. So everyone, and that was the norm back then.
Yeah.
Back in those times. And it was just, I think, the last try from Wally. I didn't even know we had to score that to qualify in the no-show.
Did you not?
No, so naive. Naive.
It was a better impact on Wally that day than it was the other game that we reviewed. Because Wally was the one to give away the penalty then.
Yes, he was. This is Wally in his prime. My brother watched it the other night, my younger brother, and he got on to me to say, I remember the night out after that, we went down to Peter Clossy's bar and Claw wouldn't let him in because he had an earring. And I had to go out and get him in. How Peter Clossy is that? Look, great times. Thank you very much to the Munster Rugby Supporters Club for playing that. It was very enjoyable. I got to relive it. Now let's never speak of it again.
Good times. I was very proud. Very proud.
Thanks for all the Penguins as well for getting on and getting in touch and sending messages. They were very, very thoughtful and nice. Do you want to remind us why we're called Penguins, or why our people are called Penguins again?
Yeah, because I think people... I think you have forgotten.
I couldn't remember why they were called Penguins.
So it was during the World Cup whenever we wanted to kind of mobilize our listeners and viewers more and get more out of them. So during the World Cup, we wanted to find out more gossip about what was going on with injuries and selection and what's going on behind the scenes at the World Cup. So Game of Thrones was still pretty much on our radar at the time. Varys with his little birds, he finds out all what's going on in the kingdom. So we wanted an unflattering version of Varys' little birds.
tell us everything that's going on.
What's the most clumsy, uncomplimentary bird we can think of? A penguin. So penguins are flying at the minute. They're in great form. And they're all loving life. And they're getting in touch loads. Again, isolation is good for Penguins. Penguin of the week for the second running, Mark Hill, followed up as Leon movie poster with I'm a feckin' legend with Zeebo.
That's brilliant.
What else did he do here? There was a couple of honourable mentions. Shane McDade, rugby trick shots. I saw that. That wasn't that good. Michael Harrison got us a YouTube link for the 2018 Grand Slam game. I haven't watched it. John Roberts, video of the young Munster fan watching the Seal game with her family. Go on, Munster! How was that?
Yeah, very good.
And then another one, Mark Hill has got another, put another one up there of myself. And it was a Happy Easter poster. It was a 1970s David Attenborough.
That's brilliant. Put all the Penguins around.
Right about Penguins. So, fair play. All the Penguins are flying. So, Mark Hill is going to get that. Although, we're concerned that Mark has been flirting with Alex Payne from the UK, House of Rugby.
I saw that one.
Frowned upon.
Yeah, easy up, Mark. A little slag.
We'll let you away with it this time.
Yeah. What's his name has been up to it again? Quade Cooper. His ridiculous piece of skill. Oh my God. It's even better than the first one.
Really?
Yeah. It's with an American football again. I think he might be doing it for us now because we mentioned him. I think he's kind of, it's for our benefit. So I'd love to see some of our Penguins try and recreate what Quade Cooper is doing. There you go.
Yes.
And yeah. Trimby, have you got a challenge for us? We're going to leave it on this note. You've got a challenge for us this week, fitness-wise.
Oh, yes.
I'm getting a load of people answering about the 100 press-ups in 4 minutes.
I'm struggling with the 100 press-ups. I've got like two or three goes. I've got low 90s, so it'll still take me another couple of weeks to get over 100. But are you happy to commit to this?
Mm-hmm.
This new challenge? So the new challenge is 100 burpees a day for a month.
What? How many burpees?
didn't see that coming, did you?
No. How many?
We'll just do it for a week, will we?
Yeah.
That's on Saturday, Sunday.
How hard would it be? How long does it take to do 100 burpees if you were to do it?
There's guys in a CrossFit group that they're doing like just over 5 minutes. A mate of mine who's pretty fit, he did it 5.5 minutes. I did it 7:05, and then 6:45.
Wow. Sean O'Brien's been smashing them out as well, hasn't he?
Yeah. So anyway, 100 burpees a day. Do it for the next week and then we'll check in. Maybe just don't go hard every single day. Maybe just kind of get them done.
Don't want to see any Penguins get any injuries on our behalf.
Or if you do get an injury, send a picture in.
Preferably. All righty, we'll leave it there. Trimby's been great chatting to you. I hope you look after yourselves. Stay safe, stay indoors, or just go out in your backyard and in power hose.
Marcus the Deccan.
I just got that mental image in my head. Thanks to everybody for watching and listening. Thanks to everyone and Joe for putting this together, for all your help and your technological genius. Thank you to Pat, Paul, Dermot and Anthony. This has been Baz and Andrews, House of Rugby, here on Joe, together with Guinness. Party on.
You were listening to Baz and Andrews, House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie for the facts.